Buzz! 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 Buzz!
At the buzzer, once again, coming back, gracing the sound waves. It's snowing outside in Denver. I'm your co-host, Jack Barsh. Over there is, who is that again?
I'm Sam Atuvier. It's not snowing in Boulder. It's about to, though. So we'll see that.
And, you know, I guess I kind of missed the snow after a quick trip to Arizona, but not really. I don't really. I actually quite like the fact that it was maybe 65 at worst for the 3 days that I was in Arizona.
Well, it was plenty nice here. A little concerningly nice out. I'm a little worried that we don't have any snowfall and that our farmers are going to die in the summer, but we will see.
Well, you know it's just going to dump in March and April. That's just... Well,
hopefully.
Yeah. Well, and I guess I'm just... Maybe it's just Arizona left a sour taste in my mouth because I guess as a way of intro for this podcast, I'm just going to complain about the last day I spent there, which was awful in every way. So the trip started off well enough. Thursday night or Thursday morning, we entered. We got to kind of hang around Phoenix. Then we watched CU beat Arizona State at the Desert Financial Arena, which was it's fine. It's an okay place to watch a game. Friday also went fine, and then Saturday, as CU fans know, they went to Tucson to take on Arizona. And on the way to Tucson, which is an hour and a half away from Phoenix, we saw two omens that should have made us turn around right away. Number one, we saw a house fire, which was like, I don't know if I've ever seen a house fire that close to a road before. Luckily, no one died in the house fire.
Was it, like, haunting to look at?
It was just strange. It was just like, oh, that's weird. And then this will come back later in the story. Don't worry. On the other side of the road, we saw maybe, like, six cars or so all in different directions, and traffic stopped. Looked like a, you know, pretty big accident, big headache. We continue on to Tucson. We get to McHale about 10 minutes before tip-off, which is the arena in Tucson. Honestly, McHale was a really nice facility. We did not have good seats. We had $7 seats, but sightlines were fine, and everything went okay. We were treated plenty fine. After the game, we decided to explore Tucson a little bit and let the traffic die down. This was the beginning of the downward spiral, Sam. So. Okay. Tucson as a town, I will just say my thoughts are it's not worth exploring. It's there wasn't a lot outside of campus that I'd want to go back to, but
I did a power ranking of all the Pac-12 cities, and like part of the joke was I've only been to like five of the Pac-12 cities. Mm-hmm. And Arizona State fans were yelling at me for not having Tucson as the worst one.
It's not great. Or as the people our gracious host in Phoenix kept calling it, the dirty tea. It wasn't the best. And then we drove home. For reference also, flight was supposed to be at 10:30, okay? 10:30 p.m. We hit the road at 4 p.m. Game ended about 2:30. And I did not make that flight.
Oh, no.
Yep. So remember that crash? That we saw on the way there.
Yeah.
That closed the highway for 10 hours.
Oh, no.
Yep. The delay was not helped by the fact that Arizona Department of Transportation, or ADOT, was giving false information about exits and closed exits. So everyone was stuck on the highway when they didn't really have to be. We eventually escaped by taking an exit and going through some cattle roads in cattle country, and then coming out the other side near the highway. But I was in that car for about 6 hours. I had eaten breakfast, and that was it. I was tired. I was hungry. We just lost. and I had to spend an extra $300 to get home. So that's what I think about when I think of Arizona basketball right now. That's my long-winded intro into the show.
Well,
do we need to recap those games? Not necessarily.
I don't want to recap those games. Those are both gross games.
Looks like CU had about as fun going to Tucson as I did, which was not a lot.
Well, you're back in Colorado. We're back in Colorado. The team is in LA.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, I don't want to talk about Kobe, but that'll be something to see McKinley Wright and everybody in LA. Yeah.
Well, and, you know, plenty of people have talked about it. I just don't feel like either of us can do it justice.
Oh, absolutely
compared
not.
Compared to the national dialogue, so.
Yeah. So, I guess moving on.
Mm-hmm.
Did anything stand out from the Washington games, just briefly?
Yeah, well, it was just nice. There was no hangover, and it looks like the team played angry after the Arizona debacle, which is good. You know, Washington State was put away by a nice dominating run. Last 10 minutes of that game, they scored 3 points or something like that.
Yeah, I saw the score. It was like 56-50, and then it ended like 76-56.
Yeah, I mean, Washington State was hitting all kinds of junk. CJ Ellaby was just throwing stuff on the wall, and it worked. And then defensive stalwart Lucas Seward was put onto him, and he didn't score much after that.
I missed that game because I was working. But
yeah, well, I mean, I was there not for the too Washington much to miss, game. Honestly. The Washington game was fun.
I wasn't guilty about missing a home game against Washington State, just as I'm going to have to work during the Cal game, and I'm like, I don't really care.
Yeah, well, hopefully. you know, I try not to dip too far into the I told you so territory, but I did absolutely after the Washington game because a lot of the – you know, I've mentioned this before, but it's a weird situation in the Colorado basketball fan base because it's a really good team. And I really like that a lot of fans have realized it's a really good team. I feel like the support is higher than it has been the past few years. The other side of this, Sam, is I also feel like there's a decent amount of fans that only have interacted with the other fans or this team after the Oregon State or the Northern Iowa losses. So some of the people during those games who said, see, Taz still can't coach his own. See, this team is still lost on offense. See, it's still the same old team. I poked and prodded a little bit after that Washington game on Twitter just because it was nice to see CU perform well against a pure zone team.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the second half was gross as hell. But the first half was just – they were moving so well, passing, and they were, like, fighting in the soft spots of the defense. And, I mean, Jake Shapiro said that Ted Boyle was borrowing elements from J.R. Payne's game plans, and J.R. Payne is the women's coach. But it was just nice to see. Like, C was not having a problem at all with one of the best defenses in the country, a 2-3 zone with a ton of length.
You say that the second half was gross as hell. I guess you were there.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was. I didn't.
You literally said this loss is going to hurt.
Well, yes. Because Isaiah Stewart is having his way, and Washington could not miss. I didn't think the CU was playing gross. I thought the shots stopped falling, and that's what eventually happened.
That's what I'm kind of getting at. But like, also, like, Hamir Wright was hitting every shot, and he's like a 30% shooter from the field.
I also said that after the five or six straight possession streak of Tyler Bayer, Dallas Walton getting blocked by Isaiah Stewart.
Yeah, I mean, Dallas Walton got blocked by the backup, Penn Johnson, but it was the same thing.
But I calmed down a little bit after Washington missed, the second or third dunk that game?
Yeah, it felt like, I think I wrote about it, that like Washington could have won that game and CU would have collapsed, but Washington was just too mistake prone. Like, they were turning it over, missing wide open shots, missing dunks.
I watched that game, I think that was Fox Sports 1, and it wasn't great commentating, but he said something that was, I think, sums it up pretty well. It's just like, This is how a veteran team at home should play, and this is how you expect a freshman talented Washington road team to play. Like, they obviously could have won that game with the talent they had, but they also were making dumb mistakes. They were not focused. They let the runs continue on for too long, where I think CU played with the ebbs and flows, obviously, but they also buckled up when they needed to.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And I think that that's a blueprint. Like, CU, they really only have to win the obvious games that they must win to make the NCAA tournament, like, unless they completely collapse. They just have to win, like, 4 home games from here on out, and they're going to be in the tournament, I think.
Yeah, so. I mean, looking at the overall tournament resume, just don't lose to Cal twice, I think, and you're pretty much golden. You're going to get in for sure. Obviously, our expectations are way higher than that for this team. You know, take the season as a whole, right? Colorado is 20 games in. They are 16-4. There's a very good argument to be made that they should expect. I mean, the expectations weren't at that level before the year. But looking at the team, they should be 18-2, right? Yeah. Don't collapse against Oregon State. Don't collapse – or not collapse, but, you know, Northern Iowa, they could have played better on defense, but Northern Iowa also was just – they shot – what was it? 60% from three.
Yeah, they're also probably a tournament team.
Yeah, Northern Iowa's good, but that's still a game you want to have back. And if CU doesn't collapse in the very last 2 minutes of that game, and also if Northern Iowa's a little less hot, then CU sitting at 18-2 right now, they're probably ranked. I mean, the only losses are Kansas and Arizona on the road, so I would say that's probably a top 15. Top 10 ranking, probably.
Yeah.
Excuse the siren if you can hear that. You know, that's dangerous looking at the rest of the year, because if you're looking at this team as an 18-2 team, I'm seeing, they might lose to Oregon. They'll lose to Oregon on the road, probably, and then they might lose to Stanford or USC on the road. But everything else I'm taking, and then that's a, 26-4 season, 27-4 season, which is crazy. Yeah.
And even then, those three losses, those are the only ones that are, like, hard games.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm not counting, like, Utah on the road as a hard game. I'm not counting Oregon State on the road. Because Oregon State, by the way, they have completely collapsed since they beat us. They beat Arizona, too, which is hilarious. But they have completely collapsed. And I'm sorry about this because the Beavers are my second team. But it's been sad to see.
It's such a weird thing because they beat Colorado, obviously, on the road. Then they go and beat Arizona by, 17 points?
Yeah.
17 points. And then they lose to Washington State pretty handily. They lose to UCLA. They lose to USC by 20. They lose to Washington. They lose to ASU. And they lost to Utah by 12. This team is super – they've lost 4 straight. As far as I know, and maybe you know more than me, they haven't had any major injuries at that time in this time period.
I think, I mean, they only have 2 real players on offense.
Thompson.
Yeah, it's just that Thompson ruined McKinley Wright when they played, and that gimmicky 1-3-1 defense just bothered CU and they panicked.
But I mean, that's the thing is like that Tinkle Thompson should still be enough to beat Utah, like. It should be enough to beat Washington State. They are just playing poorly. And Tinkle's probably out at the end of this year, I would guess.
Wayne Tinkle. Wayne Tinkle, the dad.
Yes, Wayne Tinkle, the head coach.
I mean, I'm pretty sure he's just staying there because of his son is there.
Yeah, probably. You know, it's – this. CU's going to get in the – I shouldn't say that. CU should get in the tournament, barring losing the rest of the games
in the schedule. What's more is, like, if they win the games they should, which would be at UCLA, at Cal, or UCLA on the road, Cal and Stanford at home, USC, UCLA at home, Cal and Utah at home, or on the road. That's 7 games that they absolutely should win, bare minimum. And that would put them at 23 wins with games to spare with the Pac-12 tournament still to play, and that's like a top six seed without even giving them benefit of the doubt on the road. So it's like we're in a really good position, especially because if you look at college basketball as a whole, there are no good teams. It is just a complete dearth of inequality, really. Like, it's kind of sad.
I mean, you're going to look at the top four seeds could very well be four non-Power 5 teams, right? You honestly,
of the number one seeds?
Yeah, you honestly could be looking at a top four of Gonzaga, San Diego State, Seton Hall, and Dayton. Like, that could be a legitimate thing that happens.
No, that's not going
to
happen.
No, it's not going to, but it sure could. I guess, hold on. I say that before checking if Seton Hall lost to DePaul tonight.
No, they won. They did not. Yeah, what you're saying is that, man, anybody can win it this year. Or CU's not, obviously, but, like, just us being in a favorable position to get a good seed, that's so key. And then for us to be in the Pac-12 hunt right now, I really think CU has a chance to get a share at least of the regular season title if Oregon stumbles. Like, you've noticed that they're vulnerable, right?
Well, yeah, they lost to Washington State by 12. Like, that is, I think, of the definition of vulnerability. Washington State isn't a cupcake like they have been, but they're still not great.
It was Klay Thompson night. It was magic in the air.
Yeah, well, and I don't know if you noticed this, but yeah, their point guard magically grew 4 inches and also a goatee, and he just shot the lights out. No, just kidding. Klay Thompson did not put a jersey on.
Well, you lost me at point guard.
Okay. I don't know, man. They're going to get the ball in his hands. If Klay Thompson was going to come back with college eligibility, you don't put him anywhere else but point guard.
All right. Sure.
So Oregon. They're projected at 13-5 right now, if you look at KenPom. The only projected losses they have is a 1-point loss to Stanford on the road, which I'm not sure about.
I don't think that's going to happen because Stanford has zero home court advantage.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that can also be, in its own way, a home court advantage.
Because it's quiet?
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll see. And it's, then like, it's more like a neutral site game.
Kind of, yeah.
Okay, and then Arizona?
And then Arizona is another projected loss, which I can also see on the road, obviously.
So something wacky is also Arizona, if you look at KenPom numbers, they're projected to win every single game left on their schedule, which is wacky. Really? They're ranked number 12 out of all of college basketball in KenPom. It's like strange. Their whole team is strange. I think Ken Pomeroy is really underrating how volatile they are. Like, they had their best game of the season against CU. They absolutely destroyed us. Mm-hmm. Everybody stepped up. Zeke Nnaji was everywhere. Mm-hmm. Their role players were making plays on defense and hitting threes. These guys are all hit or miss. They just all hit against CU, and CU also had a terrible game. But, like,
well, is there a more home away split team in the country than Arizona? Arizona at home, I think, is really good. Arizona on the road, I think, is bad. I think that's just how it is.
Yeah. So, again, we'll see. It's unfortunate that we don't get to play Arizona at home, because that's always the most fun game of the season besides Oregon.
Right.
And, like, Ted Boyle wants another shot at Arizona, but irony will be that we're going to probably play them in the semifinals in the Pac-12 tournament, because that's how it always happens.
Yep, and which is going to be Arizona home game light, you know.
Yeah, and we'll probably lose, to be honest. Mm-hmm. So I'm really focusing on the Pac-12 regular season tournament or the Pac-12 regular season title, because I really think CU can win that. So they're projected, you said Oregon is projected to go 13-5 in Pac-12 mm-hmm. play. Mm-hmm. We're projected 12-6. Arizona's 12-6. And then there's a pretty big drop-off between, like, USC and Stanford, because they're not very good. They just have good records right now.
Right. Well, Arizona would have tiebreaker in that case, which would still put CU at third, give them a bye on the first day of the Pac-12.
Yeah, we'd still get a share of the Pac-12 title, though.
Yeah, I mean,
that's what I'm saying.
It's all right there.
If every team goes 13-5, they don't have to steal any games to go 13-5. That's what we're saying.
No, but I'm saying to really lock it away.
Oh.
You steal that Stanford win at the very end of the year on the road.
Yeah.
I think that's a linchpin. I think we can all count on the Oregon game as not going
no.
Steve's way.
I think that if we finish the season with two losses from here on out, we will get a share of the Pac-12 title.
Because that would be a, what, 14-4 conference record? Ridiculous conference record?
Yes.
You know, it's just looking for at them for the tournament, too. Right now, they're on the five line. They're predicted on the five line,
mm-hmm.
with which, as we know, is the scariest line for a Power 16, whatever, a Power Conference team, because you usually get the really good conference champion of a smaller conference.
That's actually the 5-12 has gone to gone elsewhere. I think it's gone to the 4-13 now. That's the popular upset.
Oh, really?
Because mid-majors are getting undervalued more lately.
Well, there's still what? There's still two 5-12 upsets last year?
Yeah, okay. Anyway, the larger point is that
yes.
It's like the pretty good but not great power conference teams against the really good standout mm-hmm. mid-major teams.
But a 5 seed would still be the best seed, I believe, in the modern era for CU. The 1996 yeah. team was
97. 97.
Was 8 seed?
Yeah, because Chauncey Billups played his last game like a week after or a week before I was born.
Nice. Way to date yourself.
Mm-hmm.
That's, I mean, what this season was projected to be a success. I think the season largely so far has been a complete success. Mm-hmm. Something happened in the Dayton game where the offense figured itself out, and
not even really. We were talking about this earlier. Only like two players on CU had good offensive games that game.
Right, but the right two players did.
Yes,
you know,
and like, that was Deshaun Schwartz and McKinley Wright.
Mm-hmm. When McKinley, I think this has happened the past 2 years too, which it just keeps sneaking up on me at least. But I feel like he always like oversteps his bounds a little bit at the beginning of non-conference play. He tries too much to get out of his own, like to grow his game. And then a game is needed, or he's needed in a game where something happens in his head and he's just like, oh, I have to be fully me. And he just goes. And then that like snaps him back into like all conference level McKinley.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what happened at the Dayton game. And ever since then, he's been a different player. The player that we expected, frankly, except for he's shooting better than even I thought he was, going to. And I think it's been the same with the rest of the team. They're peaking, I should say, at the right time. And we'll know a little more about them to see if they can sweep another road trip or sweep a road trip, excuse me, like they have on the LA schools.
Yeah, so
that
they
would
have
be a huge sign.
Yeah, they have the LA schools. They have Oregon, and then they have the Bay. And the Bay, they should sweep, to be honest.
But more so than the LA schools, you think?
But yeah, but
you're more confident in that than the LA schools.
Yeah, if only. Well, I'm confident in both, but I'm also overly optimistic.
And, well, hold on. Let's play a little quiz with you, Sam. Let's do a quiz without looking it up. You cannot look it up.
I won't.
How much do you know about the Stanford Cardinal? The 15-4 third in conference Stanford Cardinal.
Their point guard looks like a little kid.
Okay, can you name him?
Well, not Dejon Davis. I mean the other guy.
Right, can you name him?
No, I can't.
Leading scorer.
This is not fair. No, I mean like I always see the stats. I always like I feel it. I just feel it. That Stanford has never scared me, not since they had like Dwight Powell.
They have one player over 6'9".
Yeah.
He plays not that much. Oscar Da Silva is good.
Let's not talk about Stanford. Let's talk about Stanford in March.
Yeah. Either way, I think you should be more scared of them. Regardless, this upcoming road trip, I think, will tell us a lot about this. We've said that a lot, but you know, a sweep, I should say, will be a huge sign because that'll be pretty much lock CU in a tournament spot, and then also give him great momentum.
I don't want to preview that game right now, so I'm going to cut you off real quick because I want to talk about other things.
Okay.
But I was going to use this as a segue earlier, but do you think McKinley Wright if he plays like this, can he win the Pac-12 Player of the Year?
No, absolutely. No, he can't. Okay. There's no – that the stats aren't there, and the story also isn't there. If you're looking for pure stats, I mean, there's a lot of crazy good score. Trace Tinkle has it. If you're looking for like
no, he's not. I mean, he's not going to win it because his team is bad.
No, and that's what I'm saying. If you're looking at stats plus story plus, honestly, the Player of the Year is almost is can be a career award sometimes.
It's gonna,
like,
I mean, it's going to be Peyton.
It's going to be Pritchard. Yeah, it's going to be Pritchard.
Okay.
Guys
had to ask.
No, I think if anyone's going to win an individual award for CU,
Tyler Bay, Defensive Player of the Year.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that might also be a career acknowledgement type deal.
Yeah. Who else could win it? Defensive Player of the Year.
Kyler Kelly, but also they're not good enough.
Yeah.
I don't know. I could see the committee being dumb and considering Zeke Nagy.
Mm-hmm.
I could see them honestly considering Peyton Pritchard, though he's – no. Who's the main guy? Who's the guy in the middle for Oregon? Not Diakite. That's Virginia.
Are you talking about Shakur Justin?
Yes, thank you. And finally Dante.
Well, Dante's only played half the year, and Bay is better than Justin, and he's had the better career numbers. I think it would be Bay.
I think Bay's probably the front runner. I would think so at this point in the year. Maybe Okongwu on USC.
Also, I mean, someone's going to get rewarded for team excellence, and it would be CU if anybody did.
Right, because everyone's played so. I mean, is Batty eligible for most improved player? Probably not. His stats took a big jump.
All right, moving on.
You're not even going to look at that, huh?
No, I don't. I also want to highlight a weakness. Also, I'm getting a little sick. It's kind of hard for me to talk right now.
Okay.
But, I want to highlight a weakness with CU, and then we could move on to – I know you want to talk about these two as breakout players.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm concerned. My main concern moving forward is that Evan Batty and Tyler Bay have struggled pretty badly against teams with, like, legit size and length and skill, namely Washington and Arizona, plus Tyler Bay's had some sketchy games elsewhere on the schedule.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see this as an issue moving forward, that they were out-rebounded by Arizona State because Romello White was moving them around, that Zeke Nagy was just jumping over Tyler Bay, for instance, and that, like, Tyler Bay was getting swallowed on the inside, like he could not be scoring at all against either Nagy or Isaiah Stewart, and in the past, Obi Toppin?
I'm not too worried about Bay, just because, I mean, look at the three names you just listed.
Yeah, like, I mean, we're going to see those guys again, though.
Maybe. We're not going to see – they're not on the schedule right now.
I mean, actually, yeah, you're right.
You know, like – and we're going to see good teams again, but Oregon was a great team. Tyler Bay did not look outmatched against Oregon. I think Stewart is a – you know, obviously a one-and-done crazy athlete. I think Topin's similar. It's not Nagy. Is he going to go pro? I don't know.
Yeah, he will.
Okay. Well, there you go.
Okay, so, yeah, you do bring a good point that we're not going to see them on schedule. We don't face any more terrifying bigs, except I don't know if you count Ogunquu.
He also is probably a one-and-done. He's less – I don't – you know, I don't think he affects the game the same way that Nagy or Stewart did inside. I think he's really good. I think he's really polished. But I don't think the polished players are the ones that give Tyler Bay the most trouble, if that makes sense.
Athletic freaks, yeah.
Yeah, I think Zeke Nagy gave him trouble because how many people have been able to out-hustle and out-jump and out-athlete Tyler Bay? Not very many, right?
Yeah.
Isaiah Stewart gave him trouble because that's a legitimate 7-footer with skill, and he knows how to use his body. That doesn't happen very often in college basketball. Obi Toppin is going to maybe win Player of the Year. Like,
yeah, and I should say that like Toppin and Stewart should – like they are NBA ready. Like these are NBA players playing in college basketball.
So I think we need to look at what Tyler Bay is as a player. I don't think we should even expect him to go toe-to-toe with those players. Okay. I think what Tad Boyle showed, and I think it...
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Boar Fruit in the past two games is, he always says this, rebounding is a full team activity, right? McKinley Wright got 8 against Washington, I think. Deshaun Schwartz had 6. Like, you basically, Bay is there and he's really good at playing boil ball. He's a really good player in the Colorado system, but he's still within the Colorado system. And I think expecting him to transcend past that is a folly. You know, I think he's really good. I don't think he's that good. I think having other people help him out and reemphasizing the fact that there needs to be 5 guys boarding it every time means Colorado won't suffer too much on the glass. Like you said, Arizona State, I rebounded them partially because I feel like a lot of the team was just like, oh, Batty will beat out Romello White. And no, he couldn't beat out Romello White because Romello White's gigantic. And he also is like, pretty good. He's a pretty good big guy, I would say.
Yeah, no, thank you. I appreciate that you're balancing me out because I tend to give credit to individual players too much and not the system.
Well, I guess that's where basketball, for a lot of, at least in your, an NBA fan, self-titled.
Self-titled.
NBA basketball is, I think. More so than college basketball, but the nice thing about college basketball is that you still have systems that can outshine individual talent, save, you know, a Carmelo Anthony or
Kemba Walker.
Yeah, exactly. So I think Tyler Bay getting swallowed up by those players is a thing that happens. I don't think it's a reason to worry, if that makes sense.
So I'm worried because when I see this happen, I see that CU has no way of getting to the basket for easy twos. And I see that CU settles for mid-ranges and three-pointers like they did all night against Arizona. And so I just get sketchy that we're going to be reliant on jumpers and we're going to go cold and lose because we have no shot, honestly.
You think CU shooting poorly? They're not shooting that poorly.
I think that, no, I'm saying that it makes them jumper reliant, and jumper reliance is high variance.
Yeah, yes, exactly. I think what you just said is correct. I think CU also has two things going for them that counteract what you're saying. Number two, they get to the foul line pretty often.
Well, not if they're not attacking the basket.
Not attacking the basket successfully. I still think they get to the foul line. Well, let's look. Let's look at the Arizona or even the Washington free throw rate, right?
Okay.
If we're looking at the Arizona box score, CU took 11 free throws, or 17 free throws, made 11. That's more than Arizona took. So 11 out of their 54 points, which, yikes, only 54 points, was free throws. That's not too bad. Let's look at Washington. Made 11, took 14. That's also not too bad. If you look at the point distribution on the year, about 22% of Colorado's points come from the free throw line, which is top 15 in the country. And that's what, you know, if you look historically, that's what the best Tab Boyle teams also did, is when they do get outmatched physically, they get to the foul line and they hopefully make shots. Foul line's more reliant or more reliable than shots.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, what was Spencer Dinwiddie's free throw rate his junior year or his sophomore year?
83 something. Remember.
Yeah, and he got to the foul line constantly, you know. It looks like Tyler Bay is 22nd in the country at free throw rate. Evan Batty's 24th in the country in free throw rate. Like, that's pretty good. Tyler Bay is drawing 6.5 fouls per 40 minutes. These are things that help you weather getting outmatched physically. But also look at the schedule. What, it's going to be USC maybe that's left that's going to make us quake in our boots?
Yeah, I guess. No, you're right. I didn't even really consider the remaining schedule with my anxiety.
It would, I mean, really Oregon's only good, be, but is Oregon yeah. scary? No.
No, they're scary. Already... They're scary for other reasons.
Right.
Partly playing at the Matthew Knight Arena. Yeah, I guess these are Yeah. Okay, we can move on probably.
Well, to me the scariest thing about this team is who's the other guy handling the ball. That is a question that has not been answered for what, 4 years?
Yeah, well, maybe next year with Keyshawn Bartholomew. We don't know.
Oh, I have super high hopes for him, but just for this team, that to me is the big bottleneck, is someone else needs to be able to make plays.
Well, since you queued me up, I may as well take the criticisms a little step further.
Go ahead.
Just Dalen Koontz, my God.
Boy, howdy. It's really been a lot. It's been a lot.
He's just been a negative in every way. And I'm getting frustrated with Maddox Daniels that literally the only thing he can do is shoot.
I am not frustrated at that at all. In fact, I am totally fine with that being his role.
No, I'm fine with it too. It's just that he gets lost on defense a lot. He like doesn't really try on the little things. And that's frustrating. If you watch him, you'll get frustrated. Like for instance, I'm watching the Blazers game on the background, then I'm watching Hassan Whiteside, and I want him to get banished from the NBA. Mm-hmm. He doesn't do the little things. And I fucking hate Hassan Whiteside. But I digress.
This is so I love his on white side, but whatever.
I'm a Blazers fan, and I hate that more than anything.
I mean, yes, Dalen Koontz and Maddox Daniels are not ball handlers. And we've learned this. Yeah. Luckily, I think Shane Gatling has really, really grown in that role. I don't cringe when he has the ball, and in fact, part of why I think Washington, the offense we had against the zone works so well against Washington, is Ted Boyle, or I don't know who brought this on, but it's actually a really good idea. Basically, they took McKinley Wright off ball for most of the possessions in the first half and kind of stuck him in the corner. Because to move the ball effectively against the zone, you need to have someone make that initial pass. But after that initial pass, a zone tries to funnel the ball to the corners and then trap or get him stuck, right? So I think a cool thing that happened is Shane Gatling made the right first pass almost every time. No turnovers that game. And then, you know, that first pass was to Bay, Batty, or Seward, who I trust on the inside. And then if you have McKinley in the corner, he's basically running the offense through that corner once he gets the ball, and it's a little more favorable for him to see those matchups. I thought that worked really, really well.
Yeah, I think also in a larger point, like Shane Gatling has stepped up in a lot of ways. And I think
he's so good this year. I think he's really, really good this year.
And he's not really shooting well. He's only at 31% from three, but that's not about – he's been the glue guy because of, like, he does those little things that you're talking about, like mistake-free basketball, which was, like, kind of a big step for him to take. Mm-hmm. And just being, like, he's put in a lot of effort defensively. And it really shows up in the team defense. And, like, he's solidified that two-guard spot next to McKinley. I'm just sketched out by the bench a little bit.
Well, it's just so weird to watch Dalen Koontz because he, like, has it all. He has everything that you need to have to be successful. He has good size. He has good athleticism. I don't think he's, like, he makes dumb choices, but I don't think he plays dumb basketball, if that makes sense.
I think his mid-range shots where he just, like, has an open lane and then he just dribbles into someone and then chucks a contested mid-range shot, I hate that. But otherwise, yeah, I agree.
Right. Well, he's also from Denver East, so maybe it's a pretty easy parallel to draw. But, like, Dom Collier did some of that too where
Not really.
Dom
Collier was, like, a very willing three-point shooter his whole career. And he would, like, spot up. That was his best role.
Oh, I know that was what I was coming to, is I think once Dom Collier figured out who he was, and now I guess that was only senior year, To me, I loved senior year Dom Collier. I thought that was a great college player. But I think, you know, he would do some of that where he knew he was successful for, like, all of his basketball career, so he would try those same moves, and then it wouldn't be successful. And then he would let that drag down a lot of his game.
Yeah, I just feel like Kuntz has taken a step back from last year. Like, he was really good as a role player who attacked. He was always in attack mode.
Right. And I don't think he's doing that at all this year.
No, I don't think so at all.
What's funny is I think Ilar Parquet is what I want Dalen Kuntz to be.
Yeah. Parquet's making jumpers now.
And he's always attack. He drives constantly. I don't know. I counted, actually, watching the Washington game. I was crazy about it. He drew 4 fouls in, like, 6 minutes of game time against Washington. Like, he is really good at that. He cuts. He slashes. He's always going towards the basket. He plays willing defense. He's active. I really like how Parquet is playing.
I've really liked Parquet's potential for a while. Do you see, like, a larger role for him moving forward?
And this team, no. Okay. But next year, that guard rotation, no Gatling, is going to make it interesting because Barthelemy is presumably going to take a lot of minutes.
And Barthelemy, for the viewers or for the listeners, is the 4-star top 100 recruit point guard who reclassified and is redshirting right now.
Yeah, exactly. And he's going to get talked about a lot. It's fun because we can just hype his potential up all the time right now, almost without consequence because no one's going to see him play. But he's going to get talked about a lot moving forward.
And mostly he's like very talented but pretty raw. Like, he's still learning how to play high-level basketball.
Well, there's a reason that he's redshirting. He's super skinny. He's learning the ins and outs. But, oh, my God, is he fast. Oh, my God, is he fast.
He's explosive.
Daniels, I think, is actually kind of figuring out his role. I think he's turning more into the gunner that I thought he was going to be at the beginning of the year. I think he's also realizing that when he drives, mostly bad things happen, which is a good thing to realize.
I complained during the Washington game that he was – not really doing anything productive, and then he immediately hit 2 threes, and it's like, okay.
He's hit timely shots all year, I think.
Yeah, you can, like, forgive a player whose one skill is that important.
Right.
Speaking of, I used to think he only had one skill, but he does not. Do you want to talk about your favorite player?
Yeah, I do, and I am vindicated. I feel vindicated, and I'm glad that you've also made me feel vindicated by joining me. I mean, I'm going to miss Lucas Seward so much when he leaves. And he's been frustrating, I guess, for a lot of his career. But, oh, my Lord, is he just the perfect senior big. He is just the perfect senior big guy. I can't help it. I'm just so happy for him. I'm so happy that there's a player like that on CU's roster. What a complete luxury to have Lucas Seward off the bench on a team. Like, that is – that is a level of luxury that I don't know has existed in Colorado basketball history.
No, I don't think it has. I don't think CU's ever really been deep in the front court at all. But, I mean, Tad Boyle said it himself. He said, Lucas Seward is a starting forward. He just doesn't start on this team.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. Thank you, Tad, for saying things better than I could.
This was Tyler Bay missed the game against Washington State with the hand injury. And Seward, what, arguably was the best player that game?
Oh, he was. I mean, he was. Double-double in like 50 or 20 minutes of game time, maybe 25. Hit everything he needed to, move the ball well. I mean, it's – what an evolution. Like, I don't know. There are people out there, and once again, I hate to keep harping on this, but there are people out there who think Tab Oil doesn't develop players, especially big guys.
What? People think that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I know. And then they'll say Wesley Gordon. And then now I have the easiest retort of all time, which is like, look at Lucas Seward his freshman year and look
also
at him
like,
now.
Wesley Gordon was not the coach's fault.
Well, we don't have to go into that. This is an easy counter. What I'm saying. Success story for Lucas Seward and also for this coaching staff to say, this is a man who everyone in the stadium cringed when he checked in his freshman year, because on defense, he would just get eaten alive by another big guy every time.
Yeah.
And now he is, I think, a legitimate average to above average player on defense right now.
And he, did he break out a little bit his sophomore year towards the end?
Yeah, that's when he started getting the hot, like we had hot Lucas Seward, and then he became cold Lucas Seward, and then he got hot Lucas Seward again.
Yeah, last year was mostly misses from him. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he rounded out his game quite a bit.
Well, he's shooting 40% from three right now on 77 attempts, which is pretty good. He's shooting around 50% from two. He's rebounding the ball really pretty good for who he is. He comes on the bench, and he kind of stabilizes that unit when he comes off the bench. But well, basically, who are we taking off from every time? Probably Tyler Bay, right? And it's just crazy to me that the offense can not even drop off, but also maybe improve when you take a guy like Tyler Bay off the bench and put Lucas Seward in. That's insane. Oh, what a guy. I'm just so happy. I'm just so happy for him.
Yeah, no, it's been a great development to see. I cannot apologize more for not liking him as a player. I called him their fourth big man this year, but that was obviously a mistake.
And also, I've mentioned this a few times, but I might shed tears every single game next year when Evan Battey and Dallas Walton start together.
Oh yeah.
Dallas Walton fighting back to be a legitimate player this year even is crazy to me. And next year when he is a legitimately good player and can play minutes, I'm going to be so goddamn happy for him.
Yeah, coming off his third ACL tear.
And he had 7 points against Washington. He had about that much against Washington State. He's played honestly pretty solid defense despite having limited lateral motion with that giant brace. And just what a complete success story he's going to be.
Yeah, do you want to move on? Do you want to move on to the UCLA?
We sure can. Previews? We sure
We're
can.
We're probably getting a little bogged down. We haven't even mentioned McKinley Wright or Deshaun Schwartz being everything we wanted them to be.
Well, we can do that, I guess, later after the season. Yeah. UCLA is first. Sam, talk about him.
Really? I haven't watched UCLA play basketball because I have better things to do with my life.
Okay. Well, I've watched UCLA play basketball.
So I can look at the schedule. They lost to Washington State. They got blown out by USC and Stanford, and they got blown out by Oregon. None of those are particularly criminal, I guess. But then they beat Cal and Oregon State in close, low-scoring games. That's all I have. They're bad. I don't think they're good. I just realized my analysis is they're bad. I don't think they're good.
That's good analysis.
Sharif O'Neal just transferred. That's the only thing I noticed. That's Shaq's kid.
Mm-hmm. He wasn't playing much anyways, though.
Yeah, he wasn't. What do you got?
I think that actually Sharif transferring might help them a little bit, might make them play a little bit more focused and tighten that rotation, which they might come out and give CU a tougher game than people are expecting.
Yeah, like people like me.
Yeah, but like you said, I don't think they are a good basketball team. I love their point guard, Tiger Campbell. Mm-hmm. He has crazy hair. His name is Tiger.
He's a cutie.
Yeah, he is a cutie. I love that they have a man named Prince Ali on the team for the fourth year. But
and
they don't
as our former Ted Chalfin will note, the UCLA band has yet to play the Aladdin Prince Ali theme, which is
crazy because it's a banger. It's a complete bop.
You literally have a player on your team named Prince Ali.
Take advantage of that when you can. Chris Smith is their main shot maker, but he's also the main shot taker, and he takes more shots than makes shots, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
They are a bottom five team in the country at three-point defense, and I guarantee Tad knows that, and I guarantee this team knows that. So watch for CU to take a bunch of threes at Pauley Pavilion. And as we know, the past 3 years, Shane Gatling loves to play at Pauley Pavilion.
I was going to say, we haven't had a Shane Gatling explosion yet.
CSU was a muted explosion, but that was still a explosion.
Okay, fair. But, okay.
I'm not too scared of UCLA. Something wacky might happen, and honestly, it's still not a resume-killing loss. But you want to sweep these games, and UCLA, you need to win that game to sweep.
I mean,
these
also
games.
Oregon State. All right, Oregon lost at Washington State and dropped from number 8 to number 12. So it's like, it's hardly a crime to lose any conference game away from home. Mm-hmm. Anything can happen. I mean, I don't think UCLA is good from what I've seen, which I've seen the stats for sure. God.
Well, they're a pretty good matchup for CU because Chris Smith, you could just put Tyler Bay on him and you're going to be mostly okay. He's not the type of guy that can make Bay hurt. Evan Batty is bigger than anyone else that can throw in the block. And you add a guy like Lucas Seward, he's going to pull them out. There's going to be plenty of driving lanes for McKinley. You know, it's just they match up not poorly.
And it's not like they have a big guard who's going to give McKinley Wright issues either. They have a little tiny one who's even smaller than McKinley.
Tiger Campbell, yeah. I mean, Prince Ali is pretty big, but he's not like Ethan Thompson. He's not like 6'6".
Yeah.
I am much, much more scared of USC. I am terrified.
Yes. Tell me why, because I don't know much about USC other than the guys who I know.
I'd love to host a college basketball podcast with a man who is indifferent at best to the state of college basketball.
I like CU basketball.
Well, Sam, I'll say for the viewers, but really it's for you. USC is a freakishly talented team that is not playing like it, as is usual under Andy Enfield, Tad's nemesis. Onyeka Okongwu is definitely the best player. He's a freshman from Chino Hills, and he is a complete physical freak. He's really polished, too.
Like, I know just, him. Because
he knows
he's
what
on,
to do with a ball.
He's on all the draft boards, so
yeah,
I know him.
Yeah, I figured you'd say that. He's really good at defense, too. He's going to eat CU alive. And Vukosevic always plays well. Nick Vukosevic, he's been at USC for like 20 years.
God, I hate his face.
Another big guy, I know.
Who is that douchebag on like the 2014 USC team who hit all those threes? I'm going to look it up. Caton Reinhart.
Oh, I forgot about him.
God.
UNLV transfer, I think.
We need to flesh out the villains.
Sleeve.
Yeah, we need to flesh out the villains of CU basketball history.
Yeah.
It's going to be mostly white shooting guards because I'm making the list.
And that's Tad's, like, I guess, what would you call it? Designated enemy. Anyways, they don't really have one of those this year. Vukosevic is in there. They have a lot of size. Isaiah Mobley, super freshman, is in there. He's a 6'10 guy.
What is Jonah Matthews to you?
Play a lot. Jonah Matthews is a sniper. I don't know if he's a pesky white shooting guard.
Oh, well, I mean, he's not.
He's definitely not one of those.
I thought you were referring to the sniper shooting guards, which he is one.
Yeah, he takes a lot of threes. He's taken 118 threes. Holy shit, he's taken 40 more threes than anyone on CU's team this year.
God.
And he has pretty good percentage.
He looks like Wes Matthews, so it checks out.
They might be related. Jonah Matthews, Wes Matthews?
Well,
I think Matthews, I've heard that on the podcast.
Wes Matthews spells it with two T's.
Is that true?
Yes.
Whatever. They have a lot of different players, and they kind of play like that. My favorite player on USC's team, I'm glad you asked, Sam, Ethan Anderson, their freshman point guard, starting for them. He briefly flirted with CU in the recruiting process, and Tabora thought he had him locked up, and then UNLV had a scholarship open up that they weren't expecting after the D'Anthony Melton drama. So Anderson stepped into that, and he's played exactly like we would, speaking of secondary ball handling issues, we would like a secondary guard to play at the CU team.
And speaking of D'Anthony Melton, he's been fantastic for the Upstart Grizzlies.
I would not have guessed that. I thought he was going to be a bust. That shows you
really well, the Suns traded him for nothing. They traded him for Javon Carter, so...
Hey, I love Javon Carter.
Well, he's not an NBA player.
He's in the NBA playing right now, so...
You know what I mean. Gary Trent Jr. is not an NBA player. And he's playing in this game I'm watching.
I don't like Gary Trent Jr. Anyways,
yeah, bad, so...
I'm scared of this team. They have a lot of size. They're very athletic. And they have a lead guard that's a bulldog. And he's really good on defense. I'm just glad that there's no was it Jordan McLaughlin? Remember Jordan McLaughlin? He started for USC for 4 years. He was really, really good, and he always gave CU fits. He's gone, thankfully. This would be a really good test for CU. This would be a really, really good test for CU. This would be a quad one win. It shows they can play against explosive size, which is what USC has, and also show that they can just grit it out against a – honestly, I mean, is this the Pac-12's – the CU's biggest rival in the Pac-12? This or Arizona, right? There's bad blood here.
Yeah, like USC and – football, it's the team we can never beat. In basketball, it's the team we like legitimately have almost started fights with.
Mm-hmm.
Arizona State is actually kind of a sneaky rival, I think, with basketball.
You know, maybe this will be mean, but Arizona State's gonna have to win for me to get more upset at them. It used to be that way under Herb Sandek when they had Jordan Baczynski, who was a villain, absolutely.
Yeah, he's really on the villain team.
But there's definite, like, Andy Enfield does not like Tad Boyle. That is a fact. Tad Boyle doesn't really like Andy Enfield. That's also a fact. And I think he really likes beating Andy Enfield when he can.
I mean, I don't disagree with anything. What are the keys to the win? If CU were to win, what are the keys?
If CU's to beat USC, Deshaun Schwartz is going to have to ball out. That's going to be a huge Deshaun Schwartz game because I don't know if they have anyone that can match up with him. And he's going to have to play bigger than his size on defense. Evan Batty's probably going to be on Nick Krosevich, so I'm not too worried there. Tyler Bay is probably going to take Okongwu, which is terrifying. You know what? That's probably going to be a pretty big Dallas Walton game. Maybe I'll put him as a key. He's probably going to play some pretty big minutes there.
What about Lucas Hewitt hitting shots?
That'd be nice, but at this point, I kind of expect him to hit two or three a game.
Do you think anybody on USC matches up well with McKinley?
Yeah, I think Ethan Anderson is actually a really good defensive guard. I think he can probably stick with McKinley pretty well.
Okay.
But that has not stopped McKinley before. You know, I also think that what was his name? What's his name for Dayton? Not Harper, Jared. Oh boy,
McClutcher.
Yeah, thank you, Jalen Crutcher. Yep.
Yeah.
He's also a really good defensive
guard.
I know
things.
And he could not stick with McKinley. So, you know, if McKinley's locked in, I don't know if anyone can stick with him all the time. But Anderson's as good as they come in Pac-12, I think, in terms of Bulldogs.
Okay. Quick, who's your national championship favorite right now?
Maybe because I'm biased for CU reasons, but I think Dayton has a legit, really good shot. I think I'm not going to go with Baylor. Kansas can probably pull it together, but Bill Self for the Final Four is an abusive relationship. Let's see. Yeah, I'm probably going to stick with Dayton, yeah.
I would stick with Kansas. I'm scared of them.
They're really, really good at defense. Kansas is really, really good at defense.
And they have a little bit of fight to them, which I
will say I also am in love with Cassius Winston and have been for 4 years. So
they keep losing, man. Michigan
I know,
State
but Tom Izzo always has the best March teams when they lose.
Also, I want to make a note that I am trying really hard to watch more college basketball the past couple weeks. I'm really trying. So I just want you to know that.
Good, as you should.
It's just
it's
I don't want to
really fun sport.
I just don't want to watch UCLA basketball.
Well, you're going to tomorrow night, or I guess when this podcast comes up tonight. You know, what a long winding road, but we talked about everything we wanted to with Colorado basketball.
Not McKinley Wright's emergence as a star.
Let's wait until he shines that star even brighter after this road trip.
All right. Well, I'm done.
I'm done. Goodbye.
Buzz. 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 Buzz.